The Sunday Baroque podcast is made possible by WSHU and the Friends of Sunday Baroque. You can find out more about the Friends of Sunday Baroque and find out how to become one yourself by visiting our website, sundaybaroque.org, under the Contact tab. Kayoko Dan has been the music director of the Chattanooga Symphony and Opera since 2011. She is the orchestra's eighth music director since its establishment in the 1930s. Before that, she was assistant conductor of the Phoenix Symphony and music director of Central Kentucky Youth Orchestras. She earned her bachelor in music education at the University of Texas and her doctor of musical arts in conducting and master in music education from Arizona State University. Her accolades include the Carrion Fellowship for Young Conductors and the David Efron Conducting Fellowship at the Chautauqua Institute. And she has studied with conductors including Kurt Mazur and Leonard Slatkin. Kayoko Dan is joining me via Zoom to talk about her life as a musician. Hi, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me today.
So first things first, you know, we're about a year or so into COVID-19 lockdown, and that has profoundly changed everyone's lives, of course. It's also changed the lives and livelihoods of musicians and orchestras. So how are you doing in all this?
Personally, I'm doing fine. I think many musicians can relate that we are pretty good at being by ourselves and studying, right? So being alone, away from society is not so difficult personally, but professionally it has hurt us. We have less opportunity to perform for people in general, and we have less people on stage. So our repertoire is drastically limited this season.
Yeah. Are you in touch with your musicians on a regular basis, just, you know, from a personal standpoint?
We had to adjust this season. So instead of doing like seven masterworks, we're doing 16 smaller concerts. So I see them every few weeks. And we are putting together more chamber-like performances, and largest group I've had, I think so far, is about 18 people, Haydn Symphony back in December.
Great. Good. So you have said that music was a part of your life right from the beginning. You started playing piano at the age of three, and it seems like you really just knew even that early on that music is your life's work. So I'm curious to know, how did that unfold, and, you know, maybe what memories you have of your early musical life, and whether you're from a musical family.
I'm not from a musical family. I wanted to join a piano class when I was three because there was a neighbor girl who was five, and I did everything she did. And she joined a Yamaha piano class, and that's what I wanted to do because she was in it. And as soon as I was in that class, it was more of a music, general music class. So we did more singing, rhythm works, clapping, playing piano. So I'm not a pianist at all. No one should pay me to play piano. But, you know, I learned the basics of solfege and just love of music and just using music as part of your voice to express yourself. And myself being a very shy child, that was the only way I could express myself and be comfortable with myself. So early on, I used music as a form of expression.
It's so interesting. I've seen that word shy been thrown around in reference to you in a number of interviews. And that seems like it would be an oxymoron for someone who is a conductor of an orchestra, because shy is not really what you think of when you think of somebody standing there. You know, you have to be pretty assertive. So how do you reconcile that? Or maybe I'm wrong about that. Maybe shy is what you do need as a conductor.
I think for me, I save all the energy of exerting myself for the time I'm on the podium, or when I'm speaking with the patrons or donors. So, and I know I'm effective at my job, But I think in my personal day-to-day life, I have to be who I am as an introverted, shy person to kind of save that energy. Mm-hmm. And neither one of them are fake. They're both real personalities. It's just I'm capable of being one or the other when the time needs.
Okay. So what exactly does a music director of an orchestra do? You know, it's more than just standing on the podium waving a baton. I suspect that not everyone realizes all the planning and the preparation and all of the additional responsibilities that come with a job like that. Could you kind of go over what that would be?
Sure. Yes, the conductor's job is basically, you know, rehearsing the orchestra and preparing for the performance and conducting the performance. Mm-hmm. That's a very simple job description. But when it comes to music director, your job scope is much larger. So planning a season is one of them. So overall arch pacing of the season, so all the programming, and also just really thinking ahead, a couple seasons ahead, to kind of shape the orchestra in a way that you vision, mm-hmm. Envision for that orchestra. Mm-hmm. And also cultivating donors and cultivating patrons and just being the arts ambassador, performing mm-hmm. arts ambassador in the community. Mm-hmm. Especially in my community, we're the only professional performing arts organization. So I feel like we should be a reference mm-hmm. for the community, and also be a really, you know, collaborative partner mm-hmm. As an arts organization as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what is the arts community like in Chattanooga?
Oh, it's wonderful. We have a ballet company that we always collaborate for Nutcracker, which sadly we didn't happen in December. Mm-hmm. And I very much missed it. Mm-hmm. It's very lively and exciting. We have a theater company. We have a wonderful arts museum, mm-hmm. a Hunter Museum, and smaller galleries. And it's just really thriving. Lots of public art, sculpture field, mm-hmm. things like that. So it's a really exciting place.
It's home now for you. So you mentioned that planning a season and kind of planning a couple of seasons ahead is a key thing for a music director. How are you doing that? I don't know if you can give away any specifics, if it's too early to, you know, give any of the particulars, but how are you readjusting for the next few seasons, given what the last season was like?
Right. So we had to cancel two concerts last season, mm-hmm. and this season we just had to scratch everything. So I will most likely recycle some of the concerts that I was planning on doing. Mm-hmm. At the same time, since everyone hit a toll, you know, financial toll this season, even though we're performing, we're not making as much money. Mm-hmm. So some of the stuff that I had to be very considerate, you know, do we have budget to do a large Strauss symphonic poem next season? Most likely not. Mm-hmm. So I may have to look into that from a budgetary point of view. Mm-hmm. But I'm just so excited to be back on this stage, you know, not so far apart from each other, because that's a challenge on its own, just playing so far away from each other.
Yeah.
But you know, we haven't announced anything for next season because we're still waiting for the vaccine rollout.
Right.
And see how that turns out.
Yeah. So speaking of, you know, having to be far apart from one another, you know, you and I are both flutists. We have that in common. And I guess flutes are considered sort of the worst, the worst instrument for spewing potential germs.
Yes.
So are you reconfiguring? Like, do you have your orchestra? Like, I know, for example, there are some orchestras that are literally placing the orchestra, you know, facing the other direction, for example, trying to take advantage of some of the acoustical panels and things like that. Are you doing anything like creative like that, or are you just basically spacing people out?
We're spacing people out. And if we're performing in a church, we might have, you know, like a trio mm-hmm. performing at one corner of the church, and then bigger ensemble in the center part, and then maybe another group on the other corner. So we have less moving around and sharing stands and things like that. And mm-hmm. since our hall has been closed since March, because it's city owned, we have been out in the community more this season, which is wonderful. We have been performing in different churches and community centers, outdoor parks, baseball field. And those different acoustics have challenges because it, you know, it takes a while to get used to a space, every different space. But it's just so wonderful to see different parts of the community at the same time.
So as I said, you are a flutist. What went into your decision to pursue conducting?
Well, you know, originally I was going to become a high school marching band director when I went to UT Austin. That's what I thought I was going to do. Because I had such a wonderful time going to public schools in Houston, Texas area, and my band directors were wonderful, and I had such a great time being in band. And when you're from Texas, it's such a big deal. But, you know, I was in youth orchestra. I loved orchestra sound a lot, but I didn't know it was a possibility to for a flute player to become an orchestra conductor. But along the way in college, I realized that there were people who were non-string players pursuing to become an orchestra conductor. So all of a sudden it's like, oh, I can do that too. And so I just kind of switched, you know, conducting is conducting, but, you know, I just switched from band to orchestra, my concentration. And I just so happened to be lucky enough to get into Arizona State for my master's degree.
So roughly half the population of the world is female, but a 2014 survey revealed that of the 150 or so top conductors in the world, only five were women. And that kind of percentage, you know, trickles down to pretty much all orchestras. So I'm wondering, why is that? What is this glass ceiling? Or is it a glass ceiling? Is there something else at play?
I think, well, it's tradition, I think. And, you know, my, like Marian Alsop, for example, she's like a trailblazer. Without her and her the conductors of her generations, I don't think I'll be around doing what I'm doing. I think it, we rely on female conductors of, you know, former generations, older generations to do a fabulous job and just laying down the foundation for us so that it's a little bit easier for us. And I'm seeing more changes towards more equality in the field, which is very, very encouraging. And I see a lot of organizations that support female conductors as well. So that's really nice to see.
You actually recently posted a blog about an interaction you had with a, I think she was also a young flutist, and she told you about how you really opened her eyes to more possibilities in her life. So this is really to your point of what you just said about people, you know, making, being mentors or being role models for the next generation, and that, you know, seeing a flutist and seeing a woman in the role of conductor was something that really inspired her. Could you talk a little bit about that interaction?
Yeah, it was really inspiring to me because I was at a Illinois Allstate Honor Orchestra, and I was just giving her an alternate fingering. He's like, trust me, I'm a flute player. You can trust me. And she later emailed me saying, you know, I didn't know that was a small Asian lady like me who plays flute could be an orchestra conductor. And that's what she wants to do now. And I was like, that's so nice. And then I realized that, you know, wow, representation matters. Seeing someone who looks like you in the leadership role like that, or the in any role that you want, you're striving for, is so important. But in my case, that wasn't, the female part wasn't my barrier. My wall was the fact that I was a wind player. And I didn't even know that, you know, girls don't conduct. I actually wasn't planning on becoming a professional conductor when I was in school. I have my doctorate degree thinking that I will, you know, teach in college somewhere. So, you know, I wasn't even looking at the fact that there aren't too many women conductors out there doing what I'm pursuing to do.
And, you know, because you did mention, you know, your doctorate and your both your bachelor's and master's degrees are music education, I believe, as well as the doctorate in conducting. So music education, though, really does continue to be a really big focus of your career and of your life. And so, I'm wondering, what is driving that passion for connecting with young musicians? Is just because that was, you know, what you originally saw yourself doing? So you've expanded and you're doing it in a different context with Chattanooga Symphony, for example. But staying true to that initial aspiration.
That's a really good question. To me, it's just who I am. Mm-hmm. And I believe that any change that you want to see will happen early on in people's lives. So if you mm-hmm. want to see more program with underrepresented composers on stage, on a professional orchestra stage, then you have to expose children to that so mm-hmm. that they have no resistance when they are adults mm-hmm. to, you know, perform these works. So I feel like that's where everything starts. Any biases you may see could be fixed by just educating younger minds. Mm-hmm. So I truly believe that exposing these kids as much as possible to great music, diverse music, mm-hmm. Is so important. So I try hard, you know, even in my community to do that, like stick with that kind of philosophy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, you raise a really excellent point because, of course, pandemic aside, the state of classical music has long been an area of concern for a lot of people. And I think the audiences are just not being augmented by enough younger listeners, and they're not being augmented by diverse listeners who are passionate about classical music and about orchestras and also feel welcome and feel embraced in the concert hall and by classical music institutions. So do you have any other thoughts or strategies for attracting those new audiences, for seeking more diversity, more inclusion in the world of classical music?
Yeah, that's such a big question. Mm-hmm. And I wish I had like magic wand just to make everything better. But I think what we're doing this season is one step closer to where we want to be. And that is being out in the community instead of, say, hey, we're playing at a Tivoli Theater. It's a beautiful historic theater. You come see us. Mm-hmm. That's a tall order for a lot of people. You know, a lot of people think that going to a symphony concert is very expensive. So number one, financial barrier. Mm-hmm. What do I wear? Mm-hmm. How do I act? Those are all very intimidating factors. Mm-hmm. So I think for us to be in different parts of the community this season and being a little bit more casual and more personal is helping. And that's what I hope that we keep doing in the future seasons, even when we're back into our hall after the pandemic. So I think that's one thing that's working for us. And recently we hired an assistant conductor for CSO, and he's also conducting the youth orchestra, and he's Mexican American, and he's really trying, you know, when this pandemic is over, we have so many great ideas to reach out to the population that speaks Spanish, and he's a likable person and he's wonderful. So there are a couple ideas that's brewing around that we're trying to reach out to the pockets of population that we haven't yet.
Hmm. Are you doing it in any way through repertory that the orchestra's playing?
We're trying, yeah. We're being mindful about programming underrepresented composers. Mm-hmm. That could be race, culture, or gender. Mm-hmm. And we're trying to celebrate each composer's and just really, you know, expose them. Mm-hmm. Because you don't know what you like unless right. you're exposed to them.
Right. So you have said, this is slightly off topic, but you have said that you are someone who gets obsessed with things and that you go all in. It's kind of all or nothing. So, and it's not just music. I mean, you have lots of other passions like knitting and yoga and training for triathlons. And I'm wondering, you know, what makes you tick? What makes Kayoko Dan tick?
I'm not doing triathlon anymore, so nope. That's zero now. So
okay.
If I'm 100% zero, so is marathon. I hurt my knees and I was like, oh, it's kind of a blessing in disguise because, you know, I got to a point that I was actually hurting myself. Right. So, yeah, I do other things besides music to relax. And also music is a never ending thing, right? Like you do conduct a concert, it's over. But you know, maybe you conducted a Brahms symphony and you think, okay, next time I'm gonna rehearse it this way, or I'm gonna phrase it this way. So it's never ending in my head. There's always something that you wanted to fix. But with knitting, I finish a project and that's it.
Yeah.
Right. It's gone. Bye. Send it to someone. Right. So to me, having that kind of project where you can be done with it. Mm-hmm. So for a marathon, I was like, I get a medal. Yay. I'm never going to be an Olympic athlete. So mm-hmm. it was just completing. So it was just like putting tick marks mm-hmm. just so that I feel better about myself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And yoga too. You've really sort of reached out to your fellow musicians, I think, with yoga as well.
Right. Yeah. I teach yoga for musicians and yoga for conductors. I just did my first Zoom yoga class yesterday. It was really strange. Because, you know, both of my hands hurt when I play. It used to hurt when I play a lot. Mm-hmm. And I noticed, especially during my graduate school, a lot of string players were injured. Yeah. And I started to think, like, what is going on? Obvious overuse. Right. But so I started to be interested in more of like a mindfulness mm-hmm. and body mind awareness connection. Mm-hmm. So I started practicing yoga. And then after about 10 years, I was like, oh, I should probably get certified to teach so that I can actually use it to help people.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'll bet your orchestra musicians appreciate your awareness of the fact that that can be an issue. Somebody who, you know, really is mindful of their physical needs as well as their musical needs. So,
yeah, it's hard. It's a hard balance, yeah. Especially for musicians. You know, you have a concert coming up, you have to prepare and mm-hmm. you have intense week of rehearsals but you just have to be mindful. Otherwise you're going to burn out.
Yeah. Literally sometimes.
Yeah.
Well, I admire you very much. I've been speaking with Kayoko Dan, music director of the Chattanooga Symphony and Opera, and I just really appreciate your sharing your story. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me.